Thanks. I'm Mitch Rosen. I'm at the Rutgers School of Public Health, and my colleague here, Peter Tabbitt, from the Rockaway Township Division of Health. So when we thought about doing this study, we've got no relationships to disclose, but when we thought about doing this study, or what brought me to thinking about doing this study, is, you know, how can I bridge some of the gaps that I have in the different hats that I wear in my office? You know, I deal with safety and health and with the NIOSH ERC Center and the hazardous waste workers, and then I have the Public Health Training Center. But how do I bridge the gap between the different populations that I work with? And looking at local health departments, what role do they have and can they have in helping safety and health in the community? And I think Robin brought that up, you know, talking about partnerships and, you know, what are other partnerships that we can create so that existing structures can help us better the workplace for those that they enforce in other areas. So that's what brought me to this. So why restaurant workers? You know, it's a large workforce. It's foreign-born, low-wage, non-union, and there's a lot of lack of safety in restaurants. About 8.5% of our workforce is restaurant workers. Their wages are about half of what the general population wage is. And there's many undocumented workers. About 28% of dishwashers, 20% of cooks are all undocumented workers. And there's been just a few studies done this. We've stolen stuff from the San Francisco study with Berkeley and the New York City study. A lot of ethnic restaurants dealing with. So looking at all of those issues, looking at the nature of the work of the workers there, their dirty, crowded kitchens and other places that lead to dissatisfaction of workers, food violations. You know, if a restaurant has food violations, you know, how are they treating their workers, and is there a correlation between that? It's not something we looked at, but it's something to think about. Time off for workers is not, you know, people have to go to work or they don't get paid. So sick workers have to go to work, and how does that affect things? There's lack of knowledge about workers' comp issues, and many workers feel that there's nothing that they can really do about this. They've got to go to work, they've got to get their money, and so looking at some of these issues, a lot of the issues in restaurants are preventable, just like in most workplaces, most of the things are preventable. So what we did, we worked in Peter's district. He's the health officer for the Rockaway Township Division of Health. He covers four towns, 43,000 restaurants, and it's a very diverse area in northern New Jersey. There's a lot of ethnic restaurants there, Latin restaurants and Asian restaurants, and there's a very diverse workforce within the community there. We looked at the full-service restaurants, and there were 232 of them within risk categories 2, 3, and 4, and I'll explain what those are in just a second. And through this survey, we reached 47, or about 20% of the restaurants in the jurisdiction. The way we did this, but let me get to the risk types first. So risk types in New Jersey, defined by the state statutes, are risk type 1 would be a restaurant that's prepackaged or heated prepackaged foods. Risk type 2 is a limited menu where you prepare, cook, or serve immediately. It limits the complex preparation, but there's still risks involved. Risk 3 is an extensive menu, and risk 4 has specialized processing that's got smoking, curing, canning, bottling, and those kinds of things. So what we did is we kind of modified the survey from San Francisco and created our checklist with 23 variables on it. We worked with our environmental health inspectors who go out and inspect restaurants and added this to their regular restaurant survey, you know, looking at the environmental conditions. This only added about 10 minutes to their work, so it's not a major investment of time. We had the support from the health officer, and it really can address and look at some of the types of hazards that are being observed there. This was observation only. We didn't go in and interview anybody. It was just what was seen. Because we saw it doesn't mean that, you know, if there was something that we saw was positive, it didn't mean that they were implementing what was there. You know, if there was some personal protective equipment that the cooks could use, it didn't mean that they necessarily were wearing it properly or using it properly. So it was just observation. So our survey kind of looks like this, and you can get copies of this. We'll gladly give it to you if you would like it. It was just two sides of a page. And then we were able to have observations and notes down at the bottom that each of the inspectors, and there were two inspectors that went out and did this. So the checklist looked at the number and gender of employees. It looked at the legally required notifications, preventive items, the presence of common hazards, some protective equipment, and access to treatment. So looking at some of the administrative issues, we checked off what kind of risk type the restaurant was, the number of employees in the kitchen and the front of the restaurant. Did it have the New Jersey minimum wage poster up? Was it in English or another language that the workers can understand it? Did it have the workers' comp poster up? Did they have first aid kits? Looking at burns, did they have pot holders, gloves, mitts, or other issues that they used to do that? Did they have cook jackets? Were the range tops overcrowded? And were sinks unblocked? Here's some pictures from some of the restaurants. What's that? Not many of them had that, but this was a good example, obviously. Yeah, it's great, you know. So looking at some of the slips, were there some non-floor mats? Were there wet floors? Were there greasy floors? Reduced vision and cluttered storage areas. Looking at cuts, were there the proper knife storage? Were there machine guards on slicers? Were the surfaces at good working heights? And falls, where they needed to get to supplies and stuff, did they have footstools or ladders? They may have had them, but we don't know if they were using them properly. Was there adequate ventilation and lighting? Were the stairwells going down? You know, typically you go in these restaurants and the stairways coming up from the basement are thin, narrow, and, you know, very difficult to, and they're carrying heavy things up, so... and were restaurants' exits blocked? So looking at some of the results, you see that overall about 58% did not have the minimum wage poster up. So one thing that they didn't, not following the law. They didn't have the workers, 62% didn't have the workers' comp poster up. And you can see the breakdown individually by the risk type of the restaurant. This was 32 out of the, you know, or 71% had dry pot holders or other methods to handle hot pots. But, you know, we're still looking at almost 30% that didn't. So how can we make an impact on them? Cook jackets, 76% had no. But in the higher risk, you can see the risk type 4 that they did. So, you know, depending on the risk, they may have made a judgment on that. And, you know, so maybe it was appropriate that they're wearing the right type of cook jackets. Again, 62% are using non-slip mats, but a fair percent aren't. Were floors cluttered? 65% was no, so that's pretty good. But the 35% that do have cluttered floors need to improve that. For storage of knives, again, 40% wasn't doing what they should be doing properly. Exits blocked, 83% had, you know, that the exits were not blocked, so that's good, but the ones that, the 17% that are, you know, are first aid kits, so, you know, we showed you the nice picture, but still 35% did not have first aid kits there. And it's interesting that the risk type 4, three of the four that were in that category did not have first aid kits, which are the highest hazards. So what we did is a little comparison between the San Francisco study that was done, you know, just a general look at the percentages, and they kind of match up pretty closely to what some of the other research has shown. You know, the big difference was in ventilation. We showed, you know, the restaurants in Rockaway Township, for some reason, you know, had better ventilation systems than in the San Francisco one. but everything else was kind of close there. So looking at some of our next steps, and let's see. We were looking to expand how we can expand the implementation of this, also expand the different hazards that would be addressed, looking at maybe electrical cords, eyewash systems, fire systems, and those kinds of things. And then looking at developing easy direction to employers and employees. What can we do to create kind of a handbook or posters or some sort of educational system for restaurant employers and employees? One area to look at is through the the training program that they have to go through, the food managers training program, but including some of occupational safety and health module within the mandated food safety courses that are out there. And then consider how the environmental health specialist, while they're doing their routine work, can implement safety and health issues within other areas, septic and well systems. How can we impact a greater number of areas and include occupational safety and health training and education in the various different ways that public health and local health departments are doing their everyday work. So some of the limitations, looking at some of the improvements that could be made in restaurants might be expensive. There's only limited action that the local health department can take on behalf of safety and health issues, but they can make referrals to other agencies. Looking at some of the implementations, as you do any kind of control, you have to assess the positive and the negative of it. Making people wear cook jacket or long sleeves, does that cause another problem? We don't know. But understanding those issues. One of the limitations in our study is that the two inspectors, these were kind of judgmental things, so there was lack of standards. We didn't take a light meter in to see what the lighting was like. It was just kind of judged based on their observation. So I think that's pretty much the crux of what we talked about and what I wanted to get across. I just want to acknowledge our two environmental health inspectors, James Brighton and Kara Saleno, who did the inspections and the checklists and got the data back to us. Looking at some of the resources that we took from New York City Department of Health and the San Francisco Department of Health, the University of California, Berkeley, and San Francisco, who did some of the research with the San Francisco people and gave us some advice as we were starting this, and also our ERC in New York and New Jersey. So with that, I will end. If you have any questions, I'll gladly take